Chapter 5. Deck 4 Delta was Anchor Point's largest single space in active use, and also one of the very, very few places that didn't feel cramped to Tully. Even with work crews scrambling around the chunky, slower-moving service heavy loaders, plodding or rolling or gliding over the metal deck, he didn't feel boxed in. On the deck below the overhead portal, a work crew waited with scaffolding materials and floodlights. A short distance away from them was another group in full biohazard gear. Was that the boarding party? Tully frowned. More than half of them were Marines. He pulled his flexi screen out of his inside jacket pocket and found directions to the gear-up area, as well as a note saying he was late. Damn Jackson. A couple of medics sealed him into a biohazard suit, strapping his flexi to his forearm on the outside of his suit before shoving him toward the deck crew. Just as he took his place among them, the voice of the deck officer of the day came over the speakers in his helmet on the general address channel. All personnel, except the deck squad and support, are to fall back to designated periphery. Deck squad, brace for a little indoor weather. The baby's in the cradle and she's coming home. Indoor weather. Tully had always thought that sounded silly, even if it was the quickest way of saying anyone nearby would feel wind rushing either into or out of the airlock when it opened. It could be a gentle breeze or a hard gust, depending on the skill of the deck ops OD at the controls. As the overhead door rolled back, air rushed upward, ruffling the plastic of Tully's biohazard suit. This OD was an undercooker. Opting to open the inner door while the air pressure in the lock was still lower than the deck's. Under the transparent canopy of the arrival dock, the Sulaco's silhouette blacked out part of the starry sky as it descended slowly, touching down on the deck with a surprisingly quiet metallic tap. The work crew erected scaffolding with quick efficiency. Apparently, even the general work crews had their best people on duty today. Tully supposed that indicated how highly Jackson thought of him, but he was still peeved about losing his last bit of downtime. He didn't see Jackson anywhere. Maybe she was giving the undercooker hell. What the present moment lacked in Jackson, however, it more than made up for with Marines. It wasn't unusual to have a few Marines in a deck squad, but not this many. They were big, too. Like Jackson had asked for the biggest guys they had. She hadn't mentioned anything about a heavy military presence, maybe because she'd thought he wouldn't show up. Right now, he was sorry he had. According to his contract, he couldn't be forced to work in unduly adverse, abnormal, or extreme conditions that would cause him to fear for his life. He'd never thought about that clause till today. While he was pretty sure he couldn't make a legitimate claim that the presence of a bunch of big, well-armed Marines in the deck crew caused him to fear for his life, he was tempted to try. The Marine looming over him on his left grinned down at him.
"It's go time," he said, his voice filtered over the comm. "You know what go means, right?"
His name tag said Skyer. He winked at Tully, then turned to look behind them. Tully followed his gaze to see a cherry picker rolling toward them.
"Please keep me safe," Tully begged Skyer silently. "Even if I mispronounce your name."
To Tully's dismay, he was in the first group to ride up to the airlock. He watched one of the Marines use electronic lockpicks to open the outer door. After opening the inner one, he motioned to Skyer. Another Marine, name-tagged Ocampo, followed him. Tully stepped into the airlock, then stopped, blinking into the darkness. Someone poked him between his shoulder blades.
"Go ahead. Don't worry. I got your back."
Tully turned to look up at him. His name was Neng, and the calm confidence in his face only gave Tully a premonitory chill as he shuffled forward, waiting for the lighting system to wake up. Nothing happened.
"What's the matter with the lights?" he asked shakily.
"Relax, brother," Ocampo said,
and Tully did, for all of half a second. Then the beam from the torch on Ocampo's pulse rifle landed on a bulkhead. The metal was scorched black with long, deep furrows in the metal, like
claw marks made by really big claws.
Look at that, will ya? Been some action here.
Ocampo sounded sorry to have missed it.
Action? Tully said in a faint voice. Did I mention I'm allergic?
Oh, yeah?
Ocampo turned to shine the torch into Tully's face.
Then maybe you want to remind us what the fuck you're supposed to be doing here,
he said, sounding like every gym teacher Tully had ever met. Taking a breath, Tully drew himself up with all the dignity he could muster.
Forging a new home for all mankind in the depths of space?
He replied in the tone that usually made bullies homicidal. If the Marine killed him, he could go back to bed. Ocampo wasn't impressed. Tully detached the absorption unit from his belt and held it up.
Also, taking air samples, he added less defiantly, for testing.
He thumbed the button, producing a sound like his grandmother kissing him, only much louder.
Great, he thought. Why does serious scientific equipment have to make stupid noises?
This was why techies got so many beatdowns.
Strangely, Ocampo seemed to be on the verge of cracking a smile.
Okay, Professor, you just keep on sucking.
He turned away to sweep his torch through the darkness. Neng's strong hand landed on Tully's shoulder again, steering him farther into the Sulaco while the rest of the boarding crew came in. Tully sighed. You could never get a beatdown when you needed one. Weapons up and ready, the Marines fanned out. The torches clipped to their rifles had little effect on the darkness. Neng's strong hand kept Tully moving farther into the ship, not really pushing him, but not giving him a choice either. It wasn't until they reached the sleep chamber that any lights finally came on, but only at half strength, some of them flickering. Tully considered asking someone to find the chamber's utility console so he could try goosing the lights past the lounge lizard setting to noon plus 500 watts. Not a compo, though. He'd just tell Tully to shut up and suck. He looked at the sampler and vowed he'd invent a silencer for it. The sound of the OD's voice on the squad channel made him jump.
Technician Tully to the cold sleep chamber, if you're not there already, for air sampling. Technician Tully to sample the cold sleep chamber air, stat.
Skyer turned his torch on Tully.
That's your cue, Professor. Hit it.
What the hell? Maybe it would jerk a laugh out of Ocampo. He pressed the sampler button again. This time it sounded like a recording of a whoopee cushion played backward, but Ocampo didn't even glance at him. His attention was on one of the sleeping capsules.
We got a Marine here in need of serious medical attention, he beckoned to the two nearest Marines. Get him to sick bay, stat.
Immediately the soldiers lifted the capsule off its base and unfolded a metal framework from the underside so they could wheel it out. Tully stared at them for a moment, wondering how they were going to get that into the cherry picker, then turned back to see Skyer standing over a capsule with a little girl inside, his expression unexpectedly tender. Tully averted his eyes, feeling like he was intruding. Ocampo found the third passenger, a woman almost as white as a biohazard suit. His expression was concerned as he glanced around the room, and Tully knew he was trying to decide whether he could spare two more Marines to take her to sickbay immediately or wait till they were all ready to leave. Skyer started to say something, then cut off with a terrible choking sound, his whole body shaking. Reflexively, Tully took a step forward, wanting to help him, then froze. A vivid red blotch suddenly blossomed in the center of Skyer's chest, just before a long black thing, frighteningly sharp and shiny with blood, broke through his torso. Tully's jaw dropped. The terrible black thing protruding from Skyer's chest was too curved for a machete or a sword and too wide for a scythe, nor was it metal. It actually looked more like a thorn, except thorns weren't curved and they weren't large enough to go all the way through a big, well-muscled Marine and come out the other side dripping with blood and tissue and something more awful. Meanwhile, someone was screaming, "Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God," over and over, like that would help. Then, as Skyer twisted and writhed and cried out in agony, he began to levitate. Tully had a clear moment to notice how Skyer's biohazard suit went on collecting his blood before all coherent thought ceased. Everything else should have ceased as well, but the Marine continued to rise upward like the subject of a sadistic magic trick. Abruptly, a long black whip fell down through the ceiling and lashed through the air to wrap itself around Ocampo's neck several times. Ocampo yanked desperately at the coil as he, too, began to levitate. Someone shoved Tully roughly to the floor as the room filled with the sound of weapons fire and people shouting, yelling, screaming in terror. He cried out, but his throat was so raw he could only produce a hoarse croak. He'd been the one screaming, he realized as he struggled to his knees and looked up to see a black shape directly overhead, reaching a hand down to him. Only the hand wasn't right. It had too many fingers that were too long, with too many joints, ending in shiny talons dripping with some kind of thick, clear substance. Tully heard himself cry out hoarsely, just as a familiar, heavy, strong hand grabbed the back of his biohazard suit and yanked him roughly out from under it. The creature made a leap away, back toward the sleep capsules, and Neng fired at it. Pale yellow liquid burst from its side, splashed on the deck, and began eating through it like carborane acid. "What the fuck?" Tully croaked. Instinct screamed at him to run. Instead, he crawled toward the sleep capsules on his hands and knees, thinking that the little girl and the woman and monsters that bled acid. Neng planted a leg in front of him to block him, shouting orders to get the civilians out and get him out now, damn it. Tully looked around, wondering if they were going to get him out, too. Well, if any conditions were unduly adverse, abnormal, and extreme enough to cause him to fear for his life, these were them. And his contract couldn't help him now. Which could only mean one thing. There had been some mistake, and not just an ordinary mistake. Someone had fucked up so royally, it would make the history books. Not him, of course. Tully, Charles A., didn't make this kind of mistake. He worked in the tissue lab, where everything was double and triple and quadruple checked because precision and accuracy ruled over everything. There was no kinda or sorta or maybe on the macro scale. Tully shook his head, trying to make his brain stop babbling so he could think. He got to his knees again and saw that Ocampo had gone limp with the whip still tightly coiled around his neck. Or maybe it was a very long black python? His gaze traveled along its length from Ocampo's broken neck to the hole in the ceiling where panels had been torn out. The creature hanging from metal beams was black and shiny, with a misshapen, grotesquely long head, hard-muscled limbs, and the same long claws that had reached for him, made for cruelty and pain. Tully's inner biologist filed all this away for later, theorizing as to whether the creature was a GMO. It had all the earmarks of a weapons developer's genetically engineered wet dream. The worst characteristics of various reptiles crossed with a Freudian nightmare. And just so it was even deadlier, acid for blood, making it dangerous, dead or alive. He saw another creature drop down from the ceiling to land on the woman's sleep capsule, jarring it out of position. The status lights blinked off and the woman woke immediately. She tried to sit up, then screamed and banged her fists against the capsule lid. The monster bared its steely teeth at her in a predatory grin that widened as it opened its jaws. Suddenly, something shot out of its mouth like a striking cobra and hit the lid right over her face. For a moment, Tully thought it was a cobra, and his inner biologist started to correct his original impressions. Then the monster raised its misshapen head, and he saw a second set of teeth telescoping from its jaws, snapping at the air. Tully decided his first impression of the creature had been too light-hearted. "There's been a terrible fuck-up," he said hoarsely. The alien on the sleep capsule whipped its head around to face him. Tully flinched, raising his arms defensively. The woman in the capsule was still screaming and yelling and trying to punch through the capsule lid. The monster couldn't have heard him, Tully thought, couldn't have been looking at him. Neng slapped the side of his head hard. "Get out of here," he bellowed. As Tully tried to obey, he saw the alien that had impaled Skyer give its tail a twitch, flicking the marine away with a seemingly casual movement. Its misshapen, eyeless head turned toward him and Neng, and its second set of teeth snapped at the air. "It's telling us where next," Tully thought, unable to move. The monster crouched on its thick hind legs, preparing to spring. If Neng fired now, Tully thought, its acid blood would drench the woman's sleep capsule, and if he caught it mid-leap, everyone in a 2-meter radius would get an acid shower, with the two of them taking the worst of it. Tully's panic was about to reach critical mass when a long, thick stream of fire roared out over his head and engulfed the monster in flames. The creature let loose with a terrible howling shriek, and Neng gave it another blast from the flamethrower. The alien, the sleep capsule, and the screaming woman inside all disappeared in a ball of fire. Tully clapped both hands over his eyes. In the next moment, the smell of diesel oil, scorched metal, and burning alien flesh hit Tully in the face like a physical blow, and his stomach spontaneously emptied itself. "Oh, Jesus," he thought, as his stomach clenched again. "My first firefight, and all I can do is puke." He was barely aware of Neng dragging him away.